You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 580, recorded on Tuesday, December 18th, 2018. Your world organized. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. We are joined today by Perry Lund, teacher at Evergreen Lutheran High School in Washington. He's going to talk about a presentation he is preparing for next summer's Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit. The topic is OneNote from Microsoft and also Microsoft Teams, perhaps one of the digital note-taking apps that might be in your future. We'll talk about California texting taxes maybe coming down the road. Some great picks of the week. Sally has an infographic that might scare you a little bit about data breaches and hacks. And I talk about voice memos. You're going to want to tune in. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. So happy you decided to join us once again for Wells Tech, episode 580. Joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am awesome, Martin. Very excited that it's the week before Christmas and very excited that EdTech Lead is happening next summer in summertime. So cold weather now, summer to look forward to.
All right. Tell us what EdTech Lead is for those of us who may not know.
Don't speak that lingo. Well, that's the shortcut name, our hashtag, actually, for the Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit happening in Wisconsin Dells, June 25th through 27th, 2019. And it's bringing together a couple of really great conferences we've had in the past. So the Lutheran Schools area in the past has done a leadership conference, and that encompassed all different school topics and drew a great crowd. We, on the other hand, have done a Wells Tech conference and encompassed all kinds of technology topics, including education technology, and drew a great crowd for that. So we decided to put our heads together and come up with one conference to meet all those different needs, and we're very excited about it, and especially excited this week because we finally got to the point where registration is open on the website.
Awesome. Registration open. And early bird pricing in effect.
That's right. You can register from now through May 1st for $325 for the entire conference. And after May 1st, the price goes up by $50, so you definitely want to get your registration in before then. If you can't make it to the full three-day event, we have single-day options. And we also have a pre-conference that you can come to and get some day-long workshops or evening workshops if you're interested in more hands-on type things.
And other than the price, another good reason to get your registration in early is to get the workshops or sectionals you want, because we do not have unlimited seating, and I'm sure there will be some popular ones that will fill up. So it's important to pick those and get your name on the list.
So that's the thing you got to do your homework on. And I will tell you, we're kind of being innovative with this conference. We are not sending out paper materials with all the sectional information. Instead, it's all online at wellsedtechlead.com/register. We went paperless, and we have, I want to say, about 80 different presenters represented out on the website with their descriptions of their sectionals and their bio information. So lots to study. We organize things by tracks. So we have six tracks: early childhood education, educational technology, leadership, ministry, and last but not least, technology. And so you can kind of go down one particular track or just take in a variety of topics. So definitely check out the website and then be sure to click that register now link and get your registration in.
Now, that registration cost, just to be clear, does not cover the cost of the Kalahari. That's a separate cost, but we have negotiated a special deal there and a good price, which includes the water park, of course. So a great opportunity to do a family vacation. You know, lots of different reasons to get over to Wisconsin Dells, but I'm going to really look forward to a couple of these sessions. Hopefully I can break away from my responsibilities and visit some. We heard from Dr. Gary Locklear from Concordia. He teaches at Concordia, I should say, a professor there, on the myth of, I think it was called the myth of neutral technology or something like that. Sounded extremely interesting. And we're trying to do that here on the podcast, is from time to time do an interview with one of the sectional presenters. And wouldn't you know it, we have one of those interviews today. We had a chance to talk with teacher Perry Lund, who is out at Evergreen Lutheran in the great state of Washington. And he is doing a topic called, I know it's on Microsoft OneNote and Teams.
That's the name of his section.
Okay, I got it. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite topics, and I'm looking forward to this one as well. So why don't we take a listen to our interview with Perry, and then we can regroup a little bit and talk about some of the things we're excited about.
Joining us on Wells Tech today is Perry Lund, who teaches at Evergreen Lutheran High School, but that's not where he is at this moment. So, Perry, welcome to Wells Tech.
Well, thank you very much.
And you are coming to us not from the great state of Washington, but from?
I am actually in the great state of Minnesota right now, Mankato, ooh, Minnesota, and Bethany Lutheran College at this point in time, and we're here with a good number, about 33 Evergreen Lutheran students at the will be at the MLC tip-off basketball tournament over the next few days.
Wonderful, doing a little college touring in the process.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We get to, the kids get to see Bethany Lutheran and MLC in one trip, so it's a good experience for the kids.
Excellent. Well, you are a longtime Wells Techer. We are happy to have you back with us on the air today. But maybe for those that aren't familiar with Perry Lund, you can introduce yourself a bit.
Sure. As you said, I'm currently serving at Evergreen Lutheran High School and teaching primarily all the science courses, but also working with a robotics club and doing guidance counseling, registrar work, and some technology, the technology work too. Originally from Iowa, my wife and I grew up there and went to college there. And been married 32 years, and our son Eric is a senior at MLC. And we are in the Tacoma area right now. Parkland Lutheran is where we go to church, and that's pretty much it, a hobby of genealogy, and I'm currently finishing a master's degree with Dr. John Meyer at MLC.
Very nice. A lot of people have a hobby of genealogy. What drew you to that particular hobby?
Yeah, on my mom's side, there was a little bit of information there, but on my dad's side, the Norwegian side, we didn't have much. So we did started doing some research a few years ago, and just to find out a little bit more about where my great grandparents came from when they immigrated here. So that was kind of what got me going on that, because I didn't have any real knowledge of, mm-hmm, of that side of the family. So.
Any surprises and any skeletons in the closet?
Not really. It's pretty uneventful. Like most immigrants at that time, my family didn't own land. They were basically laborers, farm laborers, and looking for a better opportunity. So to America they came.
Very good. Well, it's only fitting that you're out there in Tacoma, because we view you as our Microsoft in education expert. We've talked to you before about that. And that's one of the interesting things about, I think, education and some of these big companies, is they all want to kind of get into it and kind of hook the kids. Google has a big, big presence, obviously, in education. We don't hear quite as much, at least in these parts, about Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how Microsoft products are kind of embedded there at Evergreen.
Sure. So I took the call in 2013. So that at that time, I was coming out of both a private college / secondary education and private business background, where we use primarily Apple products, I would say, for the majority of the schools in those times. Evergreen already had an established presence. Several of the stakeholders, board members, and so on had worked at Microsoft, and so there were some ties there. So Evergreen already had some basic servers and licensing. And when I got here, we were making the transition to the cloud. Obviously, Google was already present in that, and Apple is doing a little stuff with their iCloud. But since we had Microsoft, they had made that commitment. We were using, at that time, Office 365 was relatively new, but Office 365 for education. And we were making that transition. So we're a bit of a hybrid, I guess, would be the way to look at it. We do set up accounts locally, but they propagate automatically to the Office 365 cloud site. And then the students have the option of using either the full-blown Office product, which ties to the cloud, or they can just use a web browser and obviously use the cloud-based applications, which the students really enjoy doing. They prefer that for the most part. So that's kind of how we got into it.
All right. I noticed your title includes something called Microsoft Innovative Education Expert. That's a mouthful. So that's a little credential that you have that goes along well with that responsibility. What's involved in obtaining that title?
Not as much as you would think, actually. sounds impressive. So, you know, the easiest way to kind of get involved in the community, and I guess that I would call it that as a community, is when you're playing around with Office 365, Ed, I was just looking for some resources. And so one of those is basically the education.microsoft.com website. And it has a whole bunch of free learning tools that are available, but not only just on software, which is one of the things I like, but a lot of it is pedagogically based. You learn the software, but you actually learn more than that. They're setting that up in a pedagogical sense, and so you're actually learning about how to use the tools in education. And so I think that's a pretty important part of that. Is actually how can you use the tools? And so Microsoft does a really nice job with that. So in my case, I got kind of hooked in 2015 or so, took a course, and then kind of got on the website. And so you accumulate hours. I guess I shouldn't say hours. They give them points. And so for every course you do, you spend a certain amount of time and you earn points. So once you have so many points and you put together a presentation of how you're actually using these tools in the classroom and how it's improving learning, they review that every summer. And then they basically give you that title and send you a certificate. So Microsoft Innovative Education Expert. To be honest, they have a map. I'm not sure how many there are in the United States. The surprising thing is that probably the vast majority of these individuals are actually in other countries. So whether it's Europe or India or Southeast Asia, it's a global community. So very much Microsoft in education is very, very global in that regard. So, but that's how I came about that. And then I usually renew that each year. It's real easy to go online and take courses about the material and whatnot. So
interesting. Perry, you are part of a series of interviews we're doing with next summer's Education Technology and Leadership Summit speakers. That's our conference coming up in June at the Wisconsin Dells, and it's no surprise that you'll be talking about a Microsoft product topic, Microsoft OneNote / Teams. If someone is considering your sectional, can you share a little bit about what they'll be learning regarding the use of these tools in maybe a school and or church setting?
Yeah, sure. And a little background. The OneNote was kind of my entry point, the tool that really got me interested in using the Office 365 services. So OneNote, class notebooks, and Teams is what we'll be talking about. I was originally a kind of a big Evernote user, but when I saw what OneNote could do and its kind of its abilities within the cloud, that's where I sort of was hooked into that, using that as a tool in education. So what we really hope to do with that is just give people a look at what's special about OneNote. It's probably one of those tools that you don't hear much about, especially from the Microsoft side if you're kind of on the corporate side. But it is a really powerful and probably best of class tool for what it does. And it's basically a digital notebook with a page section kind of structure. And so we use it at Evergreen, obviously, in the classroom, and makes that a very powerful tool. But we also use it with the staff to organize a variety of things. I use it, for instance, in my guidance and registrar's work, and keeping notes and student meetings and whatever, whether it's College Board materials for SAT, ACT. There's a whole slew of things that I just use it as an organizational tool in that regard. And then obviously we can share it with specific groups of people depending on what the relevance of the material is that we're trying to put together and whatnot. So I guess something that's pretty important in that regard too is we use PowerSchool, which is what the Synod has as a product for our student information system. And so one of the nice things is the integration via something called School Data Sync. And so our ability to actually take the course structure, and what I guess I mean by that is students sign up for classes, we assign teachers and whatnot, all the information stored in PowerSchool, in order to build OneNote class notebooks, the information is read directly out of PowerSchool, and all of that is built automatically. And so even though our school is small, if you're in any school, that's a fairly large time commitment to build classes out if your teachers are going to use this as a tool. And so the School Data Sync, which is part of the Office 365 for Education package, works with PowerSchool. Saves huge amounts of time when we're building those initial classes out, so that the teachers and the students all have that information, the preset notebooks, and then they can customize those. But it's a huge time saver. So we talk about that. We talk about Teams, which is relatively new. So Microsoft picked up Teams back in, oh boy, it's only been maybe a year or two. And so Teams is sort of, I would say, they use it across both the corporate and the education, but they fine-tune Teams. Microsoft has fine-tuned Teams to work within the education setting. And so OneNote is integrated into that. There's assignments. There's the ability to do grading and points and all kinds of other things, the use of rubrics in grading and whatnot. So Teams is sort of like Google Classroom. People have asked that question before. So I would say that would be an equivalency that you could draw from that. And Teams also has connectors, so it's extensible beyond whatever the original software can do. And so, for instance, in an education setting, I can embed Quizlet and quizzes and different types of activities like that. And so that's kind of a nice feature. So hopefully with the session we'll be talking about the integration and how Teams and OneNote work together. That's part of that.
Go ahead. I was going to ask, so are your students interacting with each other and with you via the Teams tool?
Yes.
Is that a communications piece to that?
Yeah, the communications piece to teams is that there are things called conversations. And so you can have multiple teams in a school setting. Each team, in our case, is one of the classes that I talked about. So it, it draws through PowerSchool and says, okay, Mr. Lund teaches biology and chemistry and physics and anatomy. So it pre-populates my classes, and we have a conversation tab where I can post pretty much anything, and the students can respond, and we can have discussion threads. But you can also make assignments, and those get populated to student calendars. So you can extend it quite a bit. But we use that that's a pretty significant part of what we can do with the students. So the communications tool is one, assignments, and also file storage. So I should say that Teams acts as sort of a front end to the SharePoint. It's kind of hidden in the background, so you really don't know it's there, but it builds these SharePoint back end portions, and so you can store files there that are related to that class and whatnot. In a business setting, or in a like a church setting, or maybe an administrative setting in a school, you could do the same thing. You could put groups of people together that have a common goal within the school, whether it's recruitment, I do the guidance registrar work. It could be a development office that wants to do that kind of thing. So it's very flexible and extensible that way.
Wow. They're going to get a lot out of your session. That's pretty impressive.
Well,
pretty
I haven't looked at the time yet, so I mean, I'm going to have to be pretty nimble, I think, same with that. So
yeah, lots of capabilities there. So all these tools and capabilities that you're describing, do they work on any device, even a Chromebook, for instance?
Yes, it's Office 365 is completely web-based, and that's sort of the preference of the young generation, very much so. So we're in a BYOD, so we don't tell them the exact device that they have to bring, but we give them guidelines of what we expect for a device, screen size and keyboard and such, at Wi-Fi, that sort of thing. So I would say in our school about 15% are Chromebook, 15 are Macs, and then the rest are PC laptop of some variant or kind. And so it doesn't matter if they're on a Mac or a PC. I would say the majority, they'll have a copy of Office on their computers, because they get that as part of the licensing with Office 365 for Ed at Evergreen. But I would say probably 90% or more of the students just use the web interface, and so that's what they're comfortable with. And so Chromebooks, PCs, Mac, laptops, doesn't really matter. They're happy to work on that. And also iOS devices. We don't let the kids have the smartphones in class, but, I mean, if they're away from of the classroom and they're using their phones, I encourage them to download all the Office 365 apps, because then it's accessible and they can do messaging in Teams and check OneNote directly from their phones no matter where they're at. So
interesting. Just curious, do you have iPad users, or do you allow that?
We do. iPads with at least a 9.7, 10-inch screen. We want them, we're pushing them to have a physical keyboard, mm-hmm. but, you know, students or think they can type just as well with
right.
With the virtual keyboard. That's debatable in my mind. But so
too.
We,
yeah, I know I can't.
Yeah, so they're good at thumb typing, but yeah, when it comes to actually writing sentences and stuff, I think maybe that mechanical keyboard still got a slight advantage. So
right. Yeah. Very interesting. Lots of good stuff. Just to, before we close, just to give our listeners an idea of cost. Now, you've implemented this in your school, and you've talked about an Office 365 for students mm-hmm. or education license. What are you looking at for something like that?
Okay, this is going to be a tough one for me, simply because the people who set up Evergreen System, God bless them, some of them were Microsoft employees, so they worked a deal where basically I've been here now for, this is my sixth year, we have not paid Microsoft very much. In the early years, I think we were probably paying for faculty licenses only, no student license. Everything was free to the students, and we were paying like maybe $75 to $80 to cover our faculty and staff per month. And that has went away. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but so we pay nothing. Now, to be fair, if you were starting this up, Martin, I would say you'd have to go to their website and look. I would say, depending on what you want, probably $2 to $3 per month per student is probably...
That's what's going to be my guess.
Yeah, yep. Probably the cost. And if you want to, you know, do a lot more, then it might go as high as $7. But I would guess you'd be safe in the $2 to $3. And that's more to do with, do you want the ability to download the Office?
Apps, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if that's not a big deal and you can do everything on the web, then it's free. Yeah, there's... Mm-hmm. If you want to do it strictly web-based, Microsoft
won't
charge
like
anything.
That's... It sounds like that's what most of your kids are doing anyway, and they're working in that web world.
Yeah. So, but as long as Microsoft allows us to have the licensing for the software for free, we'll take advantage of that, and that's great. So.
Okay. Well, I, for one, am hoping that my presentation does not conflict with yours, so I can go to yours as well.
Okay.
Because I'm really excited about OneNote. I use OneNote for a lot of different things. I'm not convinced on Teams yet, but I could
be.
Yeah. So we'll see where that goes. But huge OneNote fan. I don't think there's any equal to it in my mind for what it can do. So I think people that will attend your sectional are going to be real pleased with what they hear. So thank you so much for your willingness to do that, and also for your willingness to take some time out of your trip to the great state of Minnesota as well.
Yeah. Well, we're enjoying it so far, and we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys.
Awesome. Thanks again, Perry.
Just so that, full disclosure, that was actually the second time we interviewed Perry. We had a technical difficulty, and he was sitting there in Washington, graciously giving us his time for that first interview, and we had some issues, and then we had to track him down on his journey to the Midwest before we had a chance to catch up with him for a second time. But the interview, I think, was actually even better the second time. So
super polished. Yeah,
yes.
He's a pro all the way. So we really appreciate Perry giving us his time. And like you said, Martin, an exciting topic, especially for us, because in our office, we make use of those Microsoft products pretty heavily.
We do.
It was neat to see the application for churches and schools being brought out at the conference.
Yeah, OneNote, as I mentioned in our discussion with Perry, one of my favorite tools, and probably I spend, other than Trello, probably the two with OneNote, the two applications I spend the most time in, other than Outlook for email, but just kind of a go-to kind of do-everything tool. In fact, we use it for this podcast, all of our notes. Our show planning is done here. You can add attachments. We've put media files in there, audio files, images of some of the folks that appear on the show. We put the images right in there. Documents, those kinds of things. Links are easy to put in. Just a kind of a do-everything tool, which works well for our purposes because we're never quite sure what we need to throw in there.
Yeah, I guess if I had any complaints about OneNote, it would be just what you described. Anything goes. And
right.
So it's really neat to see people use it and get an idea of how to maybe structure
it. It's a little bit of organized chaos sometimes, right?
But good examples always help. So I'm looking forward to that with Perry's presentation.
Right. Another neat thing about OneNote is the sharing and collaboration. Obviously, that's what Sally and I do, but we use it for our team as well, for our Wells Technology team. So when the 12 of us meet, even though we are sometimes separated by distances, we all throw our stuff in there, and we do our weekly team meeting around stuff we put in OneNote as well.
Interjection, sorry.
Go ahead.
Even
no.
With Wells Tech, we invite Jason and Rachel share our OneNote with us. So they're not even of our Synod groups and things, but yet we're able to collaborate with them very easily for Wells Tech.
Yeah. We'll put a link in the show notes, but I think maybe 3 months ago, 2.5 months ago, I did a blog post, or at least maybe it was a video or both, where I talked about bullet journaling and using OneNote for that, trying to repurpose it because it does have some good inking
technology built in too, where you can use a stylus or use a Apple Pencil, in my case, to jot down notes. In fact, I was doing that just this morning for a meeting. Sometimes that's just an easier way to go. So very, very versatile.
Yep, and the other side of Perry's presentation is on Microsoft Teams, mm-hmm. and that's a place to do kind of similar things. It's not really content management, more conversation management and document management. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so another tool I heard recently, it's Bypass Slack, which is a competitor type tool for the same types of things. So I kind of think of both of them as somewhat of a private Facebook or a corporate
right.
kind of Facebook environment. And that can be really helpful when you have a variety of people that you need to interact with. I can imagine in a church setting with volunteers and things to introduce tools like that could be really helpful.
Yeah. And you are a Slack user, right, Sally?
I am to some degree. I have a family that does not do social media. They do not have, none of my kids have Facebook accounts. And so we convinced them to do Slack, and it's just private for our family, and it's perfect. It's just what we need. So I'm a fan.
So in order to use that, do you have to keep it open, or do you just open it when you want to kind of see what the conversation is about, or do you get notified?
You can get notified, actually, but if you're my children, you turn those off. So I have to call them and say, look at Slack sometimes. And they're very anti-social media, so I don't know why.
I don't know. I'm sure you didn't teach them that. But
no.
All right. Well, I think we all evolve in our communication preferences. Who knows what it'll be 5 years from now, but I think the hotness within a lot of corporations are these Teams/Slack kinds of tools that offer all kinds of collaboration features, you know, kind of instant message/document sharing/. One of the neat things about those tools is that you kind of have a recorded history. You can go back mm-hmm. and search, and it's a neat way to kind of manage the collective knowledge of the organization. So there's some benefit to that. But you do have to kind of live with the chaos that comes with that as well. It's not the button down communication of maybe email or something like that either. So different model. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in something like that or learning more about it, make sure you sign up for the conference and especially Perry's talk on Microsoft OneNote and Teams. I think it'll be well worth your while. All right, Sally, should we move along?
I think it's time for news and tech. And
I think
Martin,
it is
you
too.
Came across an article about California texting tax.
Yeah, this is interesting. I don't know if this is going to happen, but this is a brewing controversy within California and maybe other states. California is considering a texting tax. The reason they're doing this is that because the Public Utilities Commission, the PUC, they call it there, is considering a monthly fee for text messaging, is that there is a charge on people's telephone bills that helps public purpose programs. So those people that are low income, so some of the budgeting for that comes out of these taxes that come out of phone bills. And when texting first came out, it was granted an exemption from those taxes, and now they're trying to unexempt it to get money because nobody's making phone calls anymore. And that dollar figure is going down. So they're trying to reconcile how they're how they're funding that. And this has become quite the controversy. They talk in the article, and we'll put a link in the show notes, of course, but they talk about obviously who's against it, and that would be the phone companies because it's going to disincent people from texting. And they also talk about maybe if this becomes a reality, that people will start putting more time and energy into things like WhatsApp or iMessage, which doesn't ride on the texting infrastructure. It's purely a data application. The challenge is you need the same app on everybody's phone that you want to communicate with, and I think that's what's kind of kept texting alive, because there really is no reason to maintain it if everybody were using these more feature-rich applications like WhatsApp or iMessage or Messenger from Facebook. They all kind of fill that same bill. So it'll be interesting, because if this passes and then everybody moves to WhatsApp or iMessage or Messenger, then they still don't get the money they need because nobody's texting either. So it's quite the quandary they're in, and it'll be interesting to see how this makes its way through legislation there if this actually happens.
That is very interesting. I have a follow-up question for you, Martin.
Yeah.
Inquiring minds want to know. So on my iPhone, I have an app called Messages, and I'm pretty sure that's what you're referring to when you say
iMessage. Right.
And that's the only thing I use to text, and I text people that don't have iPhones. So
right.
How is it that
it does
works?
Both.
Okay.
Your text messages can be directed through iMessage or Messages, and that becomes your SMS as well as your iMessage app. So when you text somebody that has an iPhone and has iMessage on it, you get what's called a green bubble or a blue bubble. And a green bubble, I have to always check which is which. I think blue bubble is fellow iMessagers, yes. Hmm. And green bubble people are those people who have SMS. They don't have an iPhone, or they don't have iMessage turned on their iPhone. So that's what happens.
Well, I learned something new today. Thanks yep. for educating me.
All right. So that's what's going on over there in California. So we'll see if that makes its way through and has any impact on anybody here as well. So you have some other news in tech.
I do, and it's from Kansas City, Missouri, since we're doing location-based news. This isn't really a Wells story or anything like that, just something I came across in some of my ed tech reading, mm-hmm. and it was really intriguing to me. It's about a high school robotics team in the Kansas City area, and they are actually building a robot for the local law enforcement office. And this came from their team competing in the First Robotics League. We've talked about that with Jason
right.
Schmidt in the past. And they actually won at the national level innovation awards and things like that. There's one girl in particular that they interview that's kind of heading up their team and stuff. And she's quite the high school student, really impressive young lady. But what's neat about it is they are designing another robot, not for the First Robotics competition, but for the local law enforcement. And it will be used in hostage-type situations where they need to take something to the people negotiating with the police, and they don't want to send a live body in there into danger, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so they can send a robot, and it'll be able to deliver goods for them. And I don't know. To me, that just kind of blows me away that, you know, these kids who are learning all these different skills. This young lady says, my favorite thing is welding. You know, I mean, they're just amazing kids doing this robotics stuff. And here's a real world amazing application that this group is doing. They had a budget of about $5,000 for their parts. Mm-hmm. And the law enforcement guy that they interviewed said it would have cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars to purchase
right.
a robot to do this for them. So I just thought it was a really neat connection to the exciting robotics type things that we often talk about on the show.
Right. And I'm sure that's going to, and maybe this is already happening, I'm sure that's going to extend to not just land-based robots, but drones and, you know, those things mm-hmm. as well have application in law enforcement, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, the fact that they're actually turning to high schoolers to
isn't
make this
right?
happen.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on to Wells Now.
And I think we actually talked about this on last week's show, Martin, that there was a video coming out in relation to the C18 outreach mm-hmm. efforts being coordinated through our Congregational Services Office. And so we just wanted to be able to share that video this week and point you to instructions on how to use the video and how to use it specifically on Facebook if you want to post it or even advertise with the video. All those things are available through the C18 materials, and I think you'll find it a very engaging video, and just wanted to kind of circle back and be able to share that today.
Right. All right. So, yeah, time is definitely running out for that. But we look for more stuff from the Congregational Services Group. I think they have a lot of good things in store for congregational resources in general for things, not just for Christmas, but other seasons and other events as well. Sally, it's that time of the show where we do our tips or picks of the week.
And I have an information is beautiful, interactive infographic to share today. That's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. But the title of the infographic or
interactive scary.
Page is World's Biggest Data Breaches and Hacks. And so basically they went through and searched history, and this goes way back in history to 2004. And they have this infographic that represents each of the data breaches that have been in the news since that time. And they're kind of weighted by the size of the circle on the screen. And some of them have interesting stories, so they have different coloring to them as well. But the concept is that when you go back to 2004, there were just four between 2004 and 2006. And when you look at today, the screen is overflowing with these
yes.
huge circles of data breaches and hacks that have happened to all types of large and small corporations for that matter. Mm-hmm. And you can hover over and each one will explain, you know, a little bit of the background behind it. For instance, there's one really recent that says Marriott Hotels, December 2018, sensitive data
Big
on customers
circle.
to all Starwood Hotels, including Sheraton, Regis, and W Hotels, leaked since 2014, credit card details, and some passport information. So, yeah, that was a very large data breach, 500 million. And so, again, the circle size indicates the size of the data that was mm-hmm. breached, and it's just really interesting and also kind of sad and kind of drives home data security needs by just kind of reviewing this. So thought it was interesting.
It is, and some of these big bubbles I know I'm in. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, Sally, but Twitter, I've been at Marriott's, Equifax, Firebase, MySpace, some of these go way back, actually. So,
and then if
Anthem,
they combine all that data.
Anthem. Wow. Yeah, no kidding. So just consider your information out there. All the more reason to change passwords regularly and don't use the same password for more than one site. I know we've said that a lot, and that seems kind of onerous, but we've talked about some of these tools that help you do that, LastPass or 1Password, those kinds of things can really make it difficult. And even if somebody does hack your information on one site, they're not at least not going to be able to use it, you know, on another site. So you've got some protection there. So,
yeah, I don't know about you, Martin, but one of my least favorite things to do or to have happen is the bills that are due in December, like annual bills that come up and you're like, oh no, another bill in the month of Christmas when all these other things mm-hmm. are happening. And one of mine is LastPass. Just the timing of it. I signed up for it around Christmas time many years ago.
It's only like $24, right?
It is, but you just hate for one more bill to show up. But
right.
the big one is the best money you've spent, though. That's the thing. Yeah. So just full disclosure, the big one's my car insurance. That's huge compared to LastPass. But the timing of bills sometimes can get frustrating. But when I see that LastPass, I'm like, no question. I'm renewing that. I have to have LastPass working for me. So.
Yeah. And just maybe a good time of year to be thinking about this as a reminder for you to make sure friends and family are, you know, thinking about their passwords mm-hmm. as well. Because, boy, that would be a tragedy if you had this knowledge and you weren't encouraging them to kind of have good password hygiene as well when it's so easy to do. Take up, you know, an hour and sit with them and say, this is how easy it is. Just encourage them that way. So. All right, good, great pick. Kind of discouraging, but good pick. My pick of the week is something that I found myself using a little bit more frequently lately because when I'm in the car, that's sometimes when ideas hit or to-dos hit, where you say, I can't forget to, you know, do X, or had this thought for a project, or, oh, I have to remember to tell Sally X or Y or Z or all three. And a good way to do that is voice memos. That's an iPhone app, but this is probably an application or an app. Voice memos in general that's on most smartphones these days. But on the iPhone, they call it voice memo. And what's kind of neat about it is you can now hook it up to Siri shortcuts. So you can just yell at your phone or yell at Siri and say, hey, Siri. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, now all my devices
donuts,
are going off.
Donuts.
Yep. Create voice memo, and she'll open up the voice memo app and begin a recording immediately. Now, you do have to press the stop button once you're done recording, but it's kind of a very simple application, and uses your microphone. Here's what you say, and you see little voice waves, sound waves, so that you know that she's recording. And then it acts kind of like a little file system. It actually, what it does is it records as the title, your location, if you enable this. So if you're at home or you're on the road or whatever, you have some kind of idea where you were when you recorded it. And then you can do some light editing. You can trim it. You can chop off the beginning or end or take a slice in the middle. And then you can also share it, send it, if that's what you wanted to do through the share sheet. So you just hit share and you can send it via email or iMessage or what have you. So it's actually a very, very handy tool. Way back when I recommended, and I don't remember what brand it was, but kind of a handheld voice recorder. But since you've already got your phone there and you can do this hands-free almost, it's a great replacement for that. While I'm on that topic, just as kind of a pick 1B, the iPhone and Android too have dictation kind of built in some apps if it's enabled. So the Notes app or Drafts, which I've talked about in the past, all enable this. So if you press and hold in the where you're typing the text where it wants you to type, there's sometimes a dictate option, and that will work just like on the iOS or Android keyboard where you have that little microphone option. If you press and hold on that, it will allow you to dictate, and then it'll transcribe what you're saying actually fairly accurately, onto the screen. So if you have a lot to write down or whatever, or if you just want to go a little bit more hands-free with your grocery list or whatever it is, that's an easy way to do it as well. So it's pretty easy to use your voice with these smartphones these days, and I find them to be very, very accurate and a nice time saver, nice option. You just have to think to use it.
I'm always reminded of the Star Trek movie where Mr. Scott picks up the mouse and tries to talk to the computer. Computer.
Yep.
So voice dictation is something my husband does all the time.
Is that
and
right?
I always get a little bit jealous because I never think to do it. Like, why is he so smart to talk to his phone? It would save me so much time and energy.
Well, you married well.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
Maybe it's just a habit I need to develop.
Yes. Those are our picks of the week. Let's move on to ministry resource.
And our ministry resource this week is Christmas-oriented and a follow-up with last week's show where we talked about sharing good news at Christmas time through social media specifically. Right after we recorded that show, I came across a video from St. Paul's Lutheran School in Norfolk, Nebraska, and it was done by their 7th and 8th graders. They basically did a lip dub, which is where music's playing and they're pretending to sing along like they're singing it, and they did it all through their school and town and danced and had a fabulous time, it looks like, to O Come All You Faithful. It's kind of an upbeat, modern version of O Come All You Faithful, but they did a really great job with it. So if you're looking for something fun to share, the good news and Christmas joy, you might enjoy these 7th and 8th graders' rendition of O Come All You Faithful. We will have that video in the show notes.
Very nice. Sally, I think we're up to community feedback.
We are, and something our friend Jason Schmidt, who we've mentioned multiple times on the show already, shared recently with the Tech Tools for Wells Teachers group is a new site he came across called, I can't say it, Martin, Genially?
That's as good as I'm going to get it.
Okay, good. And it's kind of minimalistic in its display. It says, what about you? Do you bore or communicate the most stunning visual and effective content you've ever made? And so they encourage you to create an account, and there are free level accounts. Of course, there's pay for accounts as well. But I did a little bit of playing on the site, and it reminds me a lot of Canva, or even PictoChart, to kind of graphic design web-based tools that you can use to create images. The difference is that you can make your images interactive. So as you add text or little icons or whatever, you have the ability to add interactivity to it to make it fly into the image or exit or do something when you hover the mouse over it or whatever. So some animation that you can add to the components of your page. You can also do things like tooltips so that when people hover over areas of the image, some pop-up text displays, or you can add links and things like that. So nice layouts available to you, very well-designed layouts, and a lot of different formats, sizes, and shapes. You can do slide decks. You can do infographics. You can do social media graphics, all kinds of different things with really high-quality design available to pick from. And then this interactivity. So unfortunately, I haven't followed it all the way through and published something. I don't know exactly what that experience is, but I hope to have one published before the end of the year, and we can link to it when we do and see what it's like all the way through the process. But cool stuff.
All right. This is probably not fair, but I have a few questions for you.
Very not fair. Yeah.
So I'm looking at their site, and I have not gotten an account or anything. I'm just kind of a well-done site.
Yeah, definitely.
But one of the first things they list is presentation. So is this something you would use maybe in place of a PowerPoint or Keynote, mm-hmm. or would this be kind of a standalone thing where people are visiting it and interacting with it and advancing slides for themselves and maybe hearing audio, that kind of stuff?
Yep, great question. I don't know the answer.
All right.
They have presentation listed, and they have video presentation too. Yeah, so
this looks really this looks like very all inclusive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned a lot of them, but there's a ton of stuff that they claim it can do. And if Jason recommends it, I mean, I'm definitely worth a look for sure. But
yeah, it even has games listed. You can design games in it. So
no kidding.
Lots to explore here. And then obviously the pricing levels and things like that.
Right.
I'm not quite sure how much you can do for free, but good
stuff.
Interesting,
interesting. Okay, good. What else you got?
Also from Facebook's Wells Intersections group, Pastor James Aderman shared an article, something I never knew, but Canva, another online graphic design type site, is free for nonprofits. So I've used Canva for free, but it's really limiting in how much you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a page, and you just have to apply and share your 501(c).
You got it.
And they will give you a free account. So that is right up all our alleys as we are churches and schools that should qualify for that.
And what have you used Canva for?
I really like Canva for Pinterest infographic type things that are just really eye-catching. But they have, again, all different sizes. You can easily do Facebook cover images or Twitter images. They have all the different social media especially covered. But you can do posters and things like that for print. And they give you some excellent, excellent graphic designs already kind of laid out for you. I used one the other day and it was laid out, but the color scheme didn't really match the website I wanted to post it on. And that was just a real quick and easy change. I was able to save the colors and use them in multiple places very easily. So pretty intuitive site.
Very nice. All right. I'm looking forward to exploring. I haven't not used Canva a lot, but there are, I think, applications for both the tools we just mentioned. So lots of things to take a look at.
Communicating with imagery.
Yep. I have a little bit of community feedback to share. Heard from a couple of old friends, Dan Moyle and Jerry Zimpelman. Met both of those guys when I was asked to speak to the Mexican mission pastors, or national pastors, probably is a more technical term. That time there were about seven or eight of them, so I was invited down to Mexico. Actually, I was able to take Debbie along with, so it was kind of nice. But way down in Costa Maya, which some people know it as Mahual, way down very close to Belize. That's way down in the Yucatan Peninsula. They, you know, Jerry and Dan reached out to me and said, would you be willing to get the word out about a new position that they're trying to fill down there? Not a call position, an administrative position, an administrative manager to work with the Costa Maya ministries and support the ministry team down there. Does need to, that person needs to be fluent in Spanish and willing to go down there, obviously. I don't not I don't have the whole resume or in the position description in front of me, but they are, I think, calling this a partial position, so it's not for, you know, it doesn't have an end date, but it's kind of open as to how long this person would stay. Or does it say?
Yeah, it says 1-year offer with extension upon mutual consent.
It's a little bit fuzzy, but so they're looking for somebody with a little bit of flexibility, certainly with some passion for ministry and some administration skills, of course. And they're just looking for more help down there, apparently. Good things are happening. And when I was down there, really enjoyed being part of you know, seeing what they were doing and the opportunities that abound down there to get the word out, get the gospel out to people in Mexico. So we'll have a link to an online position description and their website as well if you want to learn a little bit more, or even if you just want to, you know, put them on your prayer list or give a gift, those kinds of things are all available on the website as well. So if that is something that is of interest to you or of somebody you know, here's some information for you. So I wanted to pass that along.
Excellent. Sounds like a wonderful way to spend a year or more.
Doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Beautiful place. Yeah, it's right on the right on the water there too. So it's a port of call if you're
you think they're having snow this Christmas?
I'm thinking not.
No.
No, that would not be good if that happened.
Yeah.
So we're not having snow for Christmas either. So that's what I'm hearing.
But that's at least a where good I thing. Am. Yes, I'm not shedding
too many tears over that news. All right, video of the week.
Not one, but two. You have your pick, or you can enjoy them both. The first one I've been waiting and waiting to share, and I just have to get it in before Christmas gets here. It is not Wells Connected, but a group of people that I saw online that play handbells. And that's lovely and pretty awesome to see, except these four people play about...
This is extreme handbells.
Probably three octaves or four octaves of handbells between four people. And they don't just stand there and play their set bells, which are about 20 in front of each one of them, it seems. They move around and switch up what bells to play. And I've played handbells, and I'm going to tell you, I was responsible for four of them, and I had a hard time with that. These people move around. They have got the music in them, and they are playing, of all things, Handel's Hallelujah Chorus. It's just beautiful and amazing to watch. So you got to see this video. But we also have a second brought to us by the MLC College Choir, and they're singing a beautiful rendition of Brightest and Best. It's gorgeous, and it's supplemented by a pianist, upright bass player, and a young man named Max Kerr playing violin, and he is amazing. So, yeah, if it wasn't good enough to have the college choir, you've got some good instrumentalists as well on this recording. Check it out.
Thank you for that. We should probably let people know that they can contribute to the show at any time. And we actually really enjoy that feedback we get, whether it's suggestions for future shows. It's a tip or a trick that they want to share, a story, suggestion for interview. You know, all those are great to get feedback on. And the best, I think, and simplest way is to go to the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and just click on one of the buttons at the top that will take you to one of the social networks, or leave a comment on one of the shows, or just use email, wellstech@wells.net. Another thing, and I always forget to do this, Sally, just an encouragement that if you listen to the podcast and are so inclined, leave a review in your podcast player of choice, whether that's on iTunes or the Google podcast app or whatever. Give us whatever star rating you'd like and a little comment, because that actually helps us in search results and would drive our rating up, of course, and maybe encourage other people to listen as well. So anything that you can do in that regard, or just good old-fashioned spread the word that this thing exists. We've only been doing this for almost 12 years.
Yep.
Right.
Coming up on
12 years.
On our 12th birthday. That's right.
So we'd love more people to join us. So what are we doing next week?
Well, next week is Christmas, and we are going to pre-record a show for you. It'll be an abbreviated show.
In about 10 minutes, in fact.
Yeah. But it will feature Pastor Eric Recker, who is one of the newest administrators at the Center for Mission and Ministry, and he's heading up the evangelism office, and he has so much enthusiasm for the work at hand and gives us an idea of some of the things that are coming out of that office for spreading the good news.
Very good. So please join us next week. Thank you for joining us, and have a very blessed Advent and Christmas celebration. Bye-bye.